No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast, and the Arizona Cardinals podcast that covers, well, the Arizona Cardinals from an inside and outside perspective. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, a USA Today affiliate covering the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host is Seth Cox. He is from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, an SB Nation Cardinals team site, and also runs the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Jess. How are you?
Doing great. We are almost at the beginning. We're just that close, so close. We're recording on a Tuesday night, so Wednesday, when you start listening to this, or Thursday, we're down to 11, maybe 10, maybe 9 days from the regular season. First cuts have already come and gone, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. So we have the news, roster cuts. We have the preseason game, and another loss for the Cardinals, a 34-24 loss to the Houston Texans. Have the preseason finale to look forward to, where you have scrubs playing scrubs, with all due respect to the scrubs, that, because, you know, I'm below scrub status when it comes to football, so no worries there. And we're going to talk some roster projection. This episode of the Rise Up C-Red podcast is brought to you by Fan Essentials. How would you like to get all of your favorite NBA teams merchandise, NFL teams merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? It could be NFL, it could be NBA, actually, it could be any of your favorite sports. Check out FanEssentials.net. All you do is pick your favorite sports team, and every month you get your team's gear shipped right to your door. They find the sports gear so you don't have to, and each fan box comes packed full with some amazing gear. It makes a great gift idea for any sports fan. Prices start at just $34.99. But visit FanEssentials.net and use our promo code CRED, again, CRED, S-E-E-R-E-D, at checkout, and you'll get 30% off your first month. Visit FanEssentials.net to go and go get all the essentials you need as a Cardinals fan. So let's go ahead and talk about this. The biggest news was, and it's not necessarily big news, first cuts happened, so the Cardinals roster is down to 75 players. In terms of the guys that cut, they put Mike Jenkins on injured reserve as he tore his ACL during the game on Sunday. They waived injured Jake Coker, had a knee injury. So we say goodbye to the undrafted champion from Alabama. They released 11 players, and then those were announced on Monday. On Tuesday, they made the final two moves, another pair of cornerbacks. Injury-related, Eli Buka, the undrafted kid out of Calgary, he goes on injured reserve. And then Alan Ball, the other veteran cornerback that they had signed after Mike Jenkins, he was released on an injury settlement. Interesting to note, among those final cuts, all those first cuts, were all three of the cornerbacks on the roster outside of Jenkins, because Jenkins, well, you know, Jenkins was kind of in the mix for the starting. He tears his ACL, goes on injured reserve, but the other three players who had actually played an NFL game at cornerback, you know, Sean Pratt, Asa Jackson, and then Alan Ball, all three of them ended up among the first cuts. Were there any surprises for you in this first round of cuts? And I know typically these are guys who many times aren't going to be on any roster, and every once in a while you get a few veterans that they're, you know, extending a courtesy to. Did you find anything surprising with these guys?
No. I thought the most surprising thing ended up being their handling of Eli Buka, who they clearly like and they clearly want in their organization and to be a part of this team going forward, at least in the 2017 offseason and preseason, because there's no reason you put a guy on injured reserve that is a
it was originally said as a yeah. And it was a hamstring injury. I mean, you don't put on the reserve for a hamstring injury unless you're just trying to protect yourself against it. Although in the release it says leg. So there's something up with his leg.
Right. And is it the same leg that he just had, you know, surgery on last year? You know, there's a lot of ambiguity for a reason. But I thought it was just interesting that they like him that much that they're like, all right, like let's go with this. Let's see what happens. And, you know, we'll go from there. And it just speaks to the fact that you have an organization that believes in their players and, you know, they know what they want. They know who they want. And the question becomes, you know, what do they do overall? And they didn't get a chance to really, you know, talk through everything or, you know, see everything that Buka could be. So let's put him on injured reserve. Let's keep him within the system and, you know, find out what he becomes. And that to me is incredibly interesting.
He's basically this year's Zach Wagaman. As Wagaman had the same thing happen to him last year. He, you know,
yeah, let's just hope for a better outcome, right? Let's just hope for
year
two having a better outcome.
Well, you know, when Buka was on the radio for an interview earlier in the offseason, he talked about one of the reasons why he came to the Cardinals is that they had a plan for him. And I presume that they all but guaranteed him a spot on the practice squad. They understood the injury situation or maybe put him on injured reserve maybe was something that they had in the back of the mind. You know, stash him there is you know, some fans like they're going to stash him on injured reserve. And that's essentially what they did. They had a plan for him coming back from his Achilles. I'm assuming that they all but told him, hey, we expect you to be on the practice squad unless someone swipes him off of waivers. And so we're going to keep you around. And that's just in terms of how they run an organization, they didn't, you know, Bruce Arians, who we know can be kind of impatient with players recovering from injury. When it comes to these undrafted kids, there's certain players that they're willing to kind of wait out on. We saw it in Wagaman last year. We're seeing it with Buka this year. There's been a couple of times when they're willing to, when they bring him in injured. Anthony Steen was another one a couple of seasons ago. Anthony Steen out of Alabama, they brought him in undrafted, knowing full well that they were recovering from injury, kept him around, and then had him back in the second year. And it's kind of saying, well, we'll sit on you guys for a year, see if you develop at all, and see if something happens.
And the interesting thing is, Steen is like starting in Miami now or something.
I hadn't caught that. Good for him. I didn't even know that.
So he got injured or something like that. Yeah, like so they obviously had a good read on him. I want to double check that. But, you know, they obviously have a good read on a lot of these guys, you know, and it's just hard to keep talent around and keep them, you know, on board as long. Yeah, it's Anthony Steen starting for the Dolphins in week one. So there you go.
That's fantastic. Good for him. A little insight to that is – I learned in some little bit inside information when it comes to things like that. His spot on the roster with the Cardinals became expendable because of Antoine McClain. For whatever reason, a guy that's been, you know, released five different times, you know, that was the person I talked to was kind of frustrated with that. Why you wouldn't bring in a kid like Steen, great kid, leader, really everything you want in a football player. Over a guy who's been cut so many times now that's a testament to the persistence and the continued patience for teams and the fact that McClain's still around the league after so many shots. But good for Steen. I had not heard that and I'm thrilled for him. I wish he'd have worked out here because is he going to be playing at guard or center?
I think he's starting at center. Let me double check, though, just to make sure. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like you said, like you want, you would like to see guys stick around, but it's just a numbers game. Yeah. He's starting at center. So
nice. He could have been, I mean, he potentially could have been this, the guy this year to compete with Shipley. I kind of thought that he had the potential for that, but that's neither here nor there. Congrats to Steen, who's on an NFL roster starting in the league. I know the Cardinals are happy with AQ Shipley. The fans might not be. The local talking heads.
Have I got a story about that tomorrow too?
Oh, and so the talking heads don't love it. They like every time I turn on the radio, they're talking about their concern about Shipley. They're concerned about Humphreys, and I'm just like, they're replacing Wild Sunline.
And I think the Shipley can or the Humphreys concern is like way overblown. You and I have had that conversation. So I just think it's one of those things where they love DJ Humphreys as a run blocker, and they're going to live with what he is as a pass blocker right now. And so that's kind of what you're dealing with in this moment of the growth and the maturation of him. The interesting thing is, and we can start with this kind of, is I talked to Pro Football Focus today because I can't afford a subscription. But I talked to Pro Football Focus today, and Jordan Plotcher is their guy for the Arizona Cardinals. So follow him on Twitter. I think it's at PFF_Jordan or Jordan_PFF, something like that. But he said that Shipley's graded out extremely well as a player for them, albeit in limited snaps, but he's way outgraded Evan Bain to this point. So it's one of those things where, whether or not you agree with Pro Football Focus or not, that's another, story for another day, but in the run game, Shipley's at a +2.2 for run blocking, and just a -0.3 for pass blocking. But he's only given up one hurry the entire preseason. Whereas Bame is allowed one hit and three hurries, and his run blocking is almost a -3 grade. So I think a lot of times as fans, we see what we want to see as opposed to what is actually happening on the field.
Interesting comment that you made, and I see this kind of how the Cardinals are going across their line. You've got Veldheer, he's really solid in both. But, we talk about how DJ Humphreys is, he's a plus run blocker right now, and they can live with what he does in pass protection. That seems to be like four of the five spots, because what do we have in Mike Iupati? A guy who's a mauler in the run game, has a reputation from being in pass protection. AQ Shipley, they even tell, Arians mentioned it last year, how Shipley is a little bit better run blocker than Sunline was. Sunline's a little bit better in pass protection, in part because he got the longer arms. Evan Mathis at this point, what is he? He's a physical guy in the run game and going to give up a little bit in the passing game, and you got Humphrey. So it's kind of interesting how they built this offensive line. They've been trying to build it more physically so they can have a better run game. And they're going to go with sufficient with pass protection, I think, because they trust what Carson Palmer can do with his decision making. He doesn't need a massive pocket. He just needs sufficient pass protection. He needs it not to be a sieve.
Right. And, you look at the way that they're creating this team, and it's something that you and I talked about in the offseason, something that I wrote before I took over at River Edge of the Birds while you were still in charge. And the reality is simple. They're building this team to kind of be Palmer proof. They're building it in the they're building it almost in the image of what the Denver Broncos are. And I think that's really smart. The only difference is the Cardinals are investing heavily on the offensive line, whereas, you know, the Broncos' heavy investments were really in the secondary. You know, obviously they were able to pick up DeMarcus Ware as well, but, you know, T.J. Ward and Aqib Talib, that's, I mean, those are not just big names, but those are huge contracts that they picked up. So, you know, it's one of those things that you kind of, you watch and you look at and you see what is happening, and you see that they're, it's a combination of they're trying to prepare for life after Palmer, but they're also trying to prolong Palmer's career as much as possible, because Arians, I think, understood that having Palmer throw 650 times before the NFC Championship game is probably not ideal, especially for a guy that's had, you know, some odd and unexplainable
issues, elbow issue, you know, and really that shoulder thing could come back at any time. From what it sounds like, he had that shoulder, that nerve impingement. It sounds like that's the sort of thing that could come back at any point for no reason at all.
Right, and that's, and so I think it's a very, you know, savvy thing to do, and I think it shows that they understand where they need to build. They're building, you know, young on the defensive side of the ball, very mature on the offensive side of the ball. Like I said, that's the slight difference in what the Broncos and the Cardinals have done, but it's just interesting to see how it's kind of playing out.
The one other move among the cuts that was a mild surprise to me, it wasn't a surprise to me based on playing time, but based on excitement after the draft, and that'd be the Eastern Washington tackle Clay DeBoard. I thought that they would let go of Givens Price first, but then again, DeBoard has barely played. He was the guy that VP of player personnel, Terry McDonough, said that they were very happy to be able to get him as an undrafted rookie. And it turns out, I guess he did not flash in the pan at all, as he had size issues to begin with, but he's the one guy of all the lists. I'm like, well, that's an interesting one. You know, I wrote up what my predicted first cuts were going to be. I was, you know, 50-50. I was 50-50. The ones that you're always kind of – you never know exactly, because they sometimes will keep certain young players around for that last game because they might want them on the practice squad, but you never really know. So really the only two moves that I was like, okay, I can understand, is Bukup going to IR instead of being, you know, getting the injury waiver. They want to keep him around another year. And then DeBoard was the guy that was like, well, that's a little disappointing based on some buzz after the draft. And you know this particular fan as well. There was this one particular fan that you said, you know, you shared me the email he sent with you. This was a guy that claimed that DeBoard would be competing with DJ Humphreys for that starting right tackle job. So much for that.
Right. And what people, you know, don't understand all the time is, as much as we can, you know, lament the Arizona Cardinals, you know, play the best players and la la la. Dude wasn't a draft pick of the Cardinals, and he was going to have to play out of his mind to overtake a, you know, Cole Toner, who they really like. And then Cole Toner has kind of played out of his mind so far. So, you know, it's one of those situations where you think, you know, you think you can kind of call one, but then all of a sudden the pads go on and they're kind of nowhere to be found, right? Like, you're just kind of like, oh, wow, this is awkward. Because we both expected DeBoard to kind of get a shot to at least be the practice squad guy, right? Like, we thought, like, oh, this is a guy that's going to be a practice squad guy at least, because they gave him, I think he got one of, like, the biggest slices of the undrafted free agent pool pie, did he not?
I don't remember off the top of my head. Oh, I gotta look that up. But
yeah, so I mean, it's just like one of those things. Like, Alan Ball was disappointing, and I like the Mike Jenkins thing was a freak injury. Don't get me wrong, and I don't mean this in the way it's going to come out. But
like, of course, he got hurt.
Mike Jenkins and Alan Ball, two guys that are perpetually injured, and then they both get injured. Like, I'm sorry, but what do you expect? Like, you have to know that. This, and I get it, and I get it. Football injuries happen all the time. We just heard about poor Teddy Bridgewater today.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Basically imploding on a non-contact play. So, you know, bad stuff happens all the time in the NFL. But it's one of those things where you're just like, you're just shocked, you know, that people – continue to put faith in guys that are injured consistently.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of move on from the whole the roster move, because there's much more to come for that. Obviously, there's one more preseason game, and then by the end of the weekend, we're going to know what that final 53 or what a final 53 or is the first final 53 until they make waiver moves and practice squad or trades or whatever they do. So let's kind of move on from there. We're going to talk a little bit about the preseason 3 game. So coming up next on Rise Up C-Red, we're going to talk about what we could take away from game 3. And then talk a little bit about what we're going to look forward in the preseason finale. We're back on Rise Up C-Red, and we're going to get into a little bit the preseason game from Sunday. You know, preseason game 3, which is the, you know, dress rehearsal, the final tune-up for the teams, except I guess if you're a really good team. I talked about last week on last week's show how Bruce Arians seemed to be taking the attitude towards this preseason game 3 with the same attitude the Chicago Bears did entering that season when Dennis Green had his famous blow-up when he said, the Bears are who we thought. The Bears are who we thought we were. That's why we took the field. You know, who goes to a third? We played them in the preseason. Who plays a third preseason game? Like, it's bullcrap. And, you know, Aaron just is kind of, yeah, whatever. That's because he knows the team that he has. They're just waiting for the regular season. They're just waiting to get there till they count. And I'm getting that impression, you know, the limited amount of time the starters are out there. It's not like the starters feel like they're uninterested, but I get the vibe from the team overall that they can't wait for this to be over. And thank goodness it's going to be over after Thursday.
Well, and when you have guys deciding not to play because of rolled ankles and strained MCLs and stuff like that, it kind of tells you where the mindset is. And I'm not critiquing it. You know, it's not a bad thing. It just shows you that maybe, you know, fans, we put a little too much stock into it. And we shouldn't worry about it if guys are not even attempting to play. I mean, and I'm not, again, I'm not saying this in a negative way, but three key veteran starters that are like, well, you know, we're just gonna chill on the sideline. I think you learn that, you know, there's not much to gain for this team in the preseason.
No, and if you look at now, it's not like Arians has a track record of this. This is different than other situations in other years, because in the third preseason games, when Arians was new to the Cardinals and the system was new to them, he had them playing the offense playing the entire first half. This year is different. He's not trying to evaluate his starting offense. They're not trying to get the reps in offensively, because he knows what they have. Every skill player who did anything last year, they're back. So they don't need the tune up because they already have the continuity. That being said, it was disappointing to see how they played in the first half. The fact that they couldn't I mean, they gave up 31 first half points. And they did it without, and if you look at statistically, it's not that the defense played poorly. The defense didn't play poorly. I can point to one thing while I'll kind of talk about. This is one of the big takeaways is offensively, they moved the ball really well running the ball. The running game looked fantastic. Every running back in the game looked good. David Johnson looked good. Chris Johnson looked effective. Andre Ellington looked electric. Heck, even Stephon Taylor looked was making plays out there. And then on the defensive side of the ball, the defense played well, except for one part. And that's in pass plays down the field in one-on-one coverage against cornerback two. They gave up, I think it was 5 deep pass plays for 15 yards or more. And, you know, some of them, they looked silly. Some of them were just good plays. And so there was just really, it just continued to reinforce the questions that we and fans have about that cornerback position. And, you know, when it became 3, you had Mike Jenkins in the mix, and really he was a possibility that I was comfortable with him starting because he's had experience and played at a high level. So I wasn't against that. You know, if you're okay with a Jerod Power starting, I wouldn't have no problem with Mike Jenkins starting. But, you know, now we're forced to a situation where it's going to be a Rusty Bethel or an inexperienced Brandon Williams. And, you know, we're going to have to take – there's going to be some lumps that we take with that, it appears.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting kind of time and move. And you have 2 young guys that aren't really – dynamic at the position right now, and so they addressed it in several ways. I just think it's odd the way they went about addressing it. Like I said earlier, you know, you have Brandon Williams, who's played like 500 snaps in games situations as a cornerback. You have Justin Bethel, who struggled mightily last year and then came in with a foot situation that allegedly hampered him the year before. And, you know, you're kind of stuck with them now, as you said, because your veteran players were injured. And guys that have been consistently injured. So it's not for lack of trying. It's just I think you can raise an eyebrow at the way they approach the building of that position.
When they could have, for a couple of million dollars, gone with Jerod Powers. And guess what? He looks good in Baltimore. Granted, he's playing that nickel role, but you know, they knew what they had in Jerod Powers. And probably, as of right now, he'd look really good in a Cardinals uniform right about now, I'd bet. The Jerod Powers that everyone liked to complain about would sure be much more comforting than what we have right now between Bethel and Williams. And that's not to say that they're going to be an abomination, because I think Bethel will be fine if he could get the rust off and if he can get past his foot, which I'm not convinced. I imagine it's going to bother him pretty much all year. And Williams will be a roller coaster ride. So hopefully they scheme for that. But yeah, Jerod Powers doesn't sound too bad right now.
Yeah, and that was the interesting one. I don't know what else they could have done or may have done. But it's going to definitely be a position that has to be schemed around. I mean, they're going to have to figure out a way to lessen the burden of that player and their, you know, impact in the game.
And for me, we'll get to the regular season. I think we'll see a little bit different story. Obviously, you'll have Patrick Peterson back out there. So that makes things easier because guess what? He takes her one side of the field. You've got, ideally, you're supposed to have a better pass rush. So hopefully Williams isn't in, you know, those cases where he's having to guard guys for 4 or 5 seconds. And he's, you know, only having to do that for 2 or 3 and not have to worry about those double moves. And then they can get, then you can use the safety over the top for some help and kind of scheme it that way. But there's concern, but I'm not overly concerned because I think what will happen is that the plays that they give up will be kind of like the plays they gave up when they had Jerod Powers as well. Obviously, they're not going to be as good, but Powers gave up some of the same type of things. Between Powers and Rashad Johnson, with their physical limitations, we saw some of the same things sometimes, you know, especially guys like a Tavon Austin would give Powers fits because, you know, he's just it's fast. So, you know, you'd like to see better instincts from both Bethel and Williams, but I think we're going to be able to live with it, I think. And especially if the offense can be what they should be, it takes the burden off of the defense.
And that's the ultimate goal. You want as little question marks going forward as you can find, right? Like, you want as few holes or chinks in the armor as you can find, and a healthy Peterson and Matthew, the only giant, you know, screaming question mark is that cornerback two position. From there, I mean, you can ask questions about the linebackers. They got pushed around, the inside linebackers, excuse me, and don't call Deion Buchanan a linebacker, but you know, you saw a little bit in that Houston game that they can get pushed around a little bit, but I don't think it's a huge concern. The other concern is just simply, can these guys stay healthy, right?
Right. They don't, I mean, they have depth, but they don't have great depth at certain positions. I mean, you take Kevin Minter off the field, and as adequate as he plays, would you get adequate play behind him? Take Deion Buchanan off the field. I mean, they've got Chris Clemons in that place, but Chris Clemons is a journeyman at best.
Well, and
safety, I mean, you're kind of in a good position because you've got Tyron Bryant, you got Tony Jefferson, you got DJ Swearinger. So outside of Tyron, I mean, something happens back there. You've got interchangeable pieces.
Yeah, I'm interested to see Jefferson because I don't feel like we've seen a ton of him in the preseason.
No.
And not just snaps. I just mean in playmaking.
But at the same time, in preseason game one, he was one of the captains, which was an interesting thing to see. It was kind of a money quote. He's out there saying he's kind of figured things out defensively, and Kevin Minter had the money quote on it, and it was this: oh, he's always said stuff. He never shut up before. It's just now he just knows what he's talking about. He'd always talk out there on the field. It's just now he knows. He's kind of been able to take that role of the, you know, the back end, being able to line people up and know what he's supposed to do. Interestingly, if you look at the depth chart, you know, now that Tyron's back, it is DJ and Tyron as the starters with Tony behind Tyron. And I'm interested to see once Tyron's on the field, because what we saw all through preseason was that from day one in training camp, Tony Jefferson was definitely lead safety. In some of the rotations in the competition, you'd send it in the reps, you'd see Tyvon Branch and you'd see DJ Swearinger trading days as to who was base safety. You know, Tyvon would come in, he'd be the base safety one day. And then of course he slides down to the slot, for nickel. Matthew will take over that role, but who will be the guy that comes in to play the other safety position? And who starts with him? Will it be DJ? Will it be Tony? Because it looked like Tony would be that guy to start with. That's an interesting thing to note.
It is, and you saw the overall. There's so many questions with the rotation because we haven't seen, you know, a healthy defensive backfield at all. Like we haven't seen it at all since it's been constructed. So there's no idea on the rotations and what to expect and what we can do from, you know, that perspective in terms of the Arizona Cardinals and their defense.
Moving on a little bit, there's final takeaways kind of from the preseason number three game. There were some things I liked. I liked the fact Robert Condici was able to get out there. The one thing that people are looking at and it gives me pause are the Carson Palmer turnovers that tend to be disasters. I'll credit Dave Burns for this on one of his recent shows. Palmer hasn't looked particularly good outside of the very first preseason game. Obviously, he had the one tipped pass returned for a touchdown in San Diego. Had two tip passes intercepted, one which was, again, behind the line of scrimmage, tipped, caught, and returned for a touchdown. Palmer seems to be, you know, the victim of some fluky plays. But to his credit, and to the credit, you know, we tend to overreact to things like this. This is very common. We overreact to everything because we have a short memory. It was the third preseason game a year ago was against the Oakland Raiders, and you can remember that he was statistically terrible. He completed less than 50% of his passes. He threw two interceptions. That's when Bobby Massey was manhandled by Khalil Mack. And really, you know, if this were a year ago, if that game were this year as well, there would have been great concern. Now the Cardinals ultimately won that game behind, I think it was Phillip Sims bringing them back. And that was kind of the lore of Phillip Sims at the time. But you know, the Cardinals didn't look
the genesis of Phillip Sims, if you will, that has not been. Did he was he even on a roster this preseason?
I don't think so. I don't think he was. All so right. It was the genesis and the apocalypse. Genesis and the apocalypse. That was last preseason. Genesis, and it just disappeared. But, you know, the Cardinals didn't look good last year. I mean, the starters didn't look good last year in preseason game three. You can say that the starters didn't really. The starters looked good, aside from the turnovers, the two turnovers by Palmer, one which you could probably say that there was defensive holding on the first tipped interception. David Hudson was held. The other one, which was one of those fluky plays, and for some reason in Palmer's career, he's been quite fortunate that those plays don't seem to hurt him. He. You know, if there's a number of someone, I'm sure they got the stats somewhere that of interceptable passes.
Don't get me started on made up.
On interceptable passes, for some reason they don't get intercepted. He has a really low rate at that.
Get me started on that.
If we start seeing that in the regular season where he turns into the Oakland and the Cincinnati Palmer, where he moved the ball down the field easily and then, you know, interceptions in the red zone, then there'll be cause for concern. But there's really no reason to say, oh my gosh, Palmer's bad. Bright spots, I liked Condici out there. Obviously, Britton Golden and Jackson Shipley kind of put forth some effort to put themselves back in the mix, especially Britton Golden. But other than that, you know, what else can you do from that game? Is there anything worth talking about from that other than it was good to see Bethel needed to get out there on the field. Condici needed to get out there on the field. But other than that,
I thought Condici's play was like fantastic. It's one of those things where you just look at it and you go, oh, okay, this is one of those, oh, this is fine. Like, this is exactly what you wanted to see. You were hoping for. The team got what they needed and saw out of it. Like, it was just one of those things that he was so dominant and so good that you can't help but get, you know, a little bit excited. Maybe, you know, maybe he's special. Because that's the thing. People are going to say, well, he dominated third and fourth stringers. That's what he's supposed to do. Like,
yes,
he is. He is a first string player, and he beat down these guys that are selling insurance to you next week. Like, like that. And that's what you want to see. And so the fact that he did it, I mean, that play that I vined that I posted for him, where he took on a double team, spun out of it and tackled the running back for a 1 yard gain. Like, they don't have another player on their roster that can do that. And that's just the reality. They haven't. Like, even in the prime of Darnell Dockett, he didn't have the same trifecta of strength, quickness, and agility laterally to make plays like that. And so to see him making those plays is super exciting. I think I'm trying to remember back. I kind of blacked it out from my memory on purpose. Like, it was one of those things where you watch it and you're just like, I don't understand what's going on with like 70% of these guys. I just don't get it. Even the touchdown pass, the two touchdown passes that Matt Barkley threw, those were awful throws. Like, they were awful decisions and awful throws, and his receivers made plays for him. And, you know, that's the weird thing about football. Sometimes the bad stuff is actually what's good. And that's why, like, as much as I appreciate and like these PFFs and people that break down plays and stuff like that, like, half stats or, like, made-up stats and stuff like that, like, it just doesn't work for me, because football is a game of things that don't make sense, right? Like, it didn't make sense that – Matt Barkley threw that touchdown to Jackson Shipley because he was trying to throw it to whoever was in the back of the
end zone. Nelson, I think it was.
Yeah, he wasn't even trying to throw it to him. So, you know, it's one of those things. So, but yeah, I thought overall the defense, again, is either they're ahead of the offense, or the offense and the players within it are just so laissez-faire that they, you know, it's just like, whatever. Like, whatever happens, we'll figure it out. And I think, given that it's year four, and let's just call it year, like, we'll just call it year, like, two and a half, based on injuries and that first half of a season for Palmer. But the fact that they're moving into year four, it is – they've earned that respect, don't you think? Like, they've earned the ability to have the benefit of the doubt that, you know what, maybe they will – suck at times, but they're good enough to get themselves out of it.
Yeah, well, they were the number one offense last year. Then they had a, you know, they were top 10 in both run and the pass. They were number two in scoring, and they're returning everybody. So, and they, you know, at worst, are even at center and right tackle, and are an upgrade at right guard. So, unless Palmer plays, unless he physically takes a step back, you know, we should be able to expect 30 points a game. That's, yeah, and you hate to do that, but you look at this offense and said, there's no reason why they can't average 30 points a game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's no reason for it until he comes out in the regular season and just lays a complete egg. Like, you have to give, you have to give this offense and everybody the benefit of the doubt. And then from there, you know, just kind of, it kind of trickles into the overall experience of what the team is and who they are and whatnot. So,
let's talking about that third preseason game. What are you going to look forward to this fourth game? Obviously it's going to be a bunch of guys who are just trying to essentially, they're young players getting reps that they need, and other guys basically auditioning for most other teams. Is, you know, it sounds like of the 53, the Cardinals already know roughly 45 of them. And so they're trying to fit, they're trying to fit the puzzle pieces in as to, is it going to be a ninth offensive lineman, a fourth tight end, a fifth running back, a sixth receiver, an eighth defensive lineman, a fifth corner, fit this, how the pieces in to make the numbers work. Is there anyone in particular? Obviously, I want to see Kim Dichie play. I'm pretty sure he's going to play and going to get some significant reps. I want to see Brandon Williams play some more. I hope Justin Bethel plays. I think he needs the reps. But other than that, you know, I want to see some flash from some people. I want to see Marky Christian look good. Let's see what – let's see if Kareem Martin can show – some more stuff, because he's looked pretty good this offseason in the training camp. So I want to see some of those players look good. You know, I don't, you know, with Matt Barkley playing quarterback the whole game, it's going to be a combination of Matt Barkley to J.J. Nelson and Deron Brown, and with the running attack of Kerwin Williams and Elijah Penny. So,
all right.
And they're going to be running, and they're going to be running behind Evan Bain and Cole Toner and Antoine McClain and Rob Crisp and John Wetzel. So,
hey, Cole Toner's the best guard in the NFL. So,
Pro Football Focus says so, right?
That's right, and I agree with them. See, like I said, they get some things right. So,
that has been a revelation, though. The guy that I, you know, he's doing what he needs to, and that's good, because I didn't know that he's the guy from the since the time they drafted. It was like, how, why, and how is he going to make the team?
And I think that's what's important, is that, like, one thing you can say about Keim in his regime is that he hasn't really missed on late-round picks in terms of guys that could, you know, that could fill roles on a roster. They may not be players, so to speak. I mean, you look at them like Earl Watford, Alex Okafor has been Stephon Taylor, you know, he has his role. Like, these guys are all role players, even Kareem Martin to an extent so far. But, you know, but he does a good job of identifying how they will assist the Arizona Cardinals in being better. And I think that is extremely important, and that is extremely, you know, that's the sign of a good GM. You know, people want every draft pick to be a starter, but that's just unrealistic, because at some point you run out of positions to start at.
Right. So you need a guy. You want your fifth round pick, your sixth round pick, to be able to hold a reserve role, be a steady reserve for 3-4 years, and then you can let him go and do it again, and then you never have to spend any money on your backups.
Right. And so, you know, Cole Toner all of a sudden makes, if he continues, Earl Watford, what's the word I'm looking for? Expendable. Like, so all of a sudden now in 2017, instead of saying, okay, are we going to pay Earl Watford, you know, 3 years?
Which they might do, you know, if they decide
Yeah, exactly. They might do it still, but it's one of those things where now you at least have an option, because you can say, oh, we don't need to pay him 3 years, $5 million when we have Cole Toner for 3 years and a total of, you know, $1.5 million.
$1.5 million, right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just one of those things that I'm excited to watch Cole Toner play. I'm excited to see Chris Hubert and Jackson Shipley and Britton Golden play a little bit, because they're probably going to be looking for jobs next week. Elijah Penny, the same thing. Kerwin Williams, the same thing. Like, these are not shots at these players, that these are just, this will be their opportunity to kind of stand out. And if they are, you know, men amongst boys, then they are, you know, then they're doing it correctly, because that is what you have to do in a fourth preseason game, is you have to show somebody, a team somewhere, it may not be the team you're playing for, that you are worthy of a position.
Exactly. And then, you know, I want to see, now, I have a hard time, I'll be perfectly honest, when I go and when I look at, when I'm watching a game, the last place I'm looking is in the trenches. and when I'm watching a game, I have a hard time doing that. So I don't notice unless there is a blown up play, whether someone ends up in the backfield or people get, and someone else mentions it to me. So I don't notice the interior line. I don't notice the interior defensive line. I see the edge play. I see the stuff on out in the corners, the skilled players. So you want to see somebody step up. So who's going to be the guy that plays best? You know, if Britton Golden not only makes plays on special teams, but plays well as a receiver role, does he sneak his way back on the roster? Because it seems like the last 3 years, he's the guy that sneaks onto the roster at the end. A guy like Lamar Lewis, I'm interested in seeing because he, to me, looked like entering camp, a camp body. You know, he's a little undersized. Granted, that's kind of the trend now at inside linebacker. You know, I hadn't really seen anything from it, but now he gets talked about as special teams. He's going to be in the mix. I don't think he makes the roster, but will they decide that they want to keep around for the practice squad, especially since he is an actual inside linebacker and not a safety that they converted to linebacker? So, because I mean, maybe they do. Maybe they do want to look ahead to beyond Kevin Minter, who's entering his last year.
Right, and that's the other thing is they're still, you know, as much as they are trying to win now, they are also trying to position themselves for 2017. So Minter, this is his last season. You know, Andre Ellington, this is his last season. So you want to see these guys kind of step up. Michael Floyd, same thing. You know, you want to see Jerron Brown. You want to see J.J. Nelson continue to play well. Because then, as much as it pains fans, it allows the Cardinals to invest in other positions. Or, you know, for instance, you know, one of the things they haven't had to do a whole lot of is invest in the wide receiver position in free agency. Well, that's because they've done a hell of a job in the early rounds, the middle rounds, and the late rounds, finding wide receivers that can, and undrafted, that can, you know, that they can coach up and fill roles. And so, you know, you don't have to then, you know, look for a wide receiver. You know, you don't ever have to be in play for an Emmanuel Sanders type, you know, you're not going to be looking like, you don't have to, and I know this is going to be blasphemy to a lot of people, but you don't have to spend big money on Michael Floyd. You can say, oh, we can let this guy go because we have, you know, four guys behind him that may not be as physically talented, but they can put up the same numbers. And like you said, that's what you're trying to find. So if you look at a Gabe Martin or a, you know, Lamar Lewis type and you say, you know, they're not there yet, but I think next year they could be guys that, you know, that can compete to replace Kevin Minter and there wouldn't be a drop off. And we can save that $4.5 million that Minter's probably going to command, $3.5 to $4.5 million that Minter's going to command. And we can invest that into finding a right guard, you know, or a center or, you know, whatever the position is. And so that's what they're doing here as well, as you know, excellently pointed out.
Let's look forward to kind of wrap up this part and kind of move to the next section and, you know, after the break, kind of wrap up the last segment. We'll talk about our projections for the 53-man roster. See how we see things playing out. Don't know if there's necessarily going to be a surprise, but next up on Rise Up Sea Red, we will talk about final cuts, which will be coming this weekend. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and let's kind of take a look at the potential of a final 53. I put together my roster projection. I might try to throw together one last one after we do the preseason game. But I've got, you know, I felt the 46 of the 53 players that I had on the roster were locks. And then it was after that, who do I like a little bit better? Do you see any work, any way in the world where they keep a third quarterback on the roster? I don't right now. I just don't see that happening. I don't think there's, I don't think Matt Barkley's even going to be a practice squad guy. Here's that name again. Berkovici, it looks like he's going to make the Chargers roster in some way. Zach Mettenberger, baby. Is that Mettenberger? No,
no. No. I don't want to talk about it anymore. No, but here's the thing, and you kind of hit on it. I'll disagree with you on the practice squad thing. You could conceivably have Barkley, if he gets through, on the practice squad, because it seems like there's a pitch count on Palmer this year. Does it not? I mean, it does to me, at least. Like, they're making a concerted effort to make sure he's not overthrowing. And, you know, maybe this is just me reading into things, whatever. But, you know, I think Barkley could find his way on the practice squad. I don't think that there's any way he's on the active roster.
I think it'll be somebody else on the practice squad that they bring in. That'll be a new look.
Yeah, I just think it's going to be I think they need a third quarterback.
Yes.
With the fact that it seems like they are putting, like I said, Palmer on a pitch count. From there, you know, the questions become what positions have the most needs. You hit on it at the beginning of the show. I think they have to keep, like, every breathing, living body at the cornerback or defensive back position, whatever, however you want to label it. But they have to keep as many of those guys as they can, don't you think? Because
I mean,
whether it's Carriel Brooks or Harlan Miller or whoever else is still on the roster right now that I'm forgetting off the top of my head.
They still have Trevon Hartfield and Ron Zamort, I think. I think both of them are still
Hartfield
around.
Was the one I couldn't think of. Good call. Hartfield. You know, whether it's one of those guys, I just think that they need able bodies. Or, you know, maybe they keep Matthias Farley, although he didn't play a ton in the game on Sunday. But, you know, if it's Matthias Farley and they end up moving – you know, Tyvon Branch to corner more. I just think that's what they need to do from a roster standpoint right now.
Now, interesting thing, you know, minor position battle. We saw Danny Dillon get waived. You saw him get released. So, you know, Cameron Kennedy, he's the long snapper, won the job. I didn't, you know, that's one of those positions. I had a clue. I didn't have the inside information, but I had a clue. And so when I projected my cuts, I thought it was going to be Dillon. Put it out that morning on Monday morning. And it was based on this. I looked at the snap counts. And what did I see? I saw that Kennedy had one snap. And I saw that Dillon had six snaps. And so I had to go back to the game. You know, you don't pay attention to who's out there at long snapper. So I was like, when did Kennedy get out there? And I would fast forward through the game. I looked at the first long snap. Oh, it was the field goal attempt. It was the field goal. And guess who was out there? Kennedy with the first. I'm like, oh, he's the starter. And so that's how I made that decision. But aside, you know, going back to my 53, talking about the defensive backs, I thought about Alan Bowles. I think Mike Jenkins' injury really kind of changed things. Because I think they wanted him on the roster, not only for veteran depth, but as a potential guy who could handle a starting job. Should you know, Brandon Williams and Justin Bethel both be either unable to do it or just be abomination or Bethel be hurt. So I thought about putting Ball there, but then based on his injury and the fact that he just really hadn't done anything, I had to think this way. Patrick Peterson's already an established veteran, so they don't need anyone else in the room for that. Peterson's now that guy. And so I kept five corners that opens the door. So they got Peterson, Williams, Bethel, Carriel Brooks. And that's where I was able to open the door for Harlan Miller. I was going to have a hard time with that with Jenkins around, but he's got the special teams play. And so I kept five there. I kept five safeties. Actually, technically, I kept seven safeties, but two of them are linebackers. I don't think there's, I mean, I think the five safeties is a given. I don't think there's, I had all of them as locks. It's going to be Matthews, it's going to be Jefferson, it's going to be Branch, it's going to be Swearinger. And there's no way they're going to pass on Marquise Christian because they really like him. And then obviously I've got Chris Clemens and Deion Buchanan at linebacker. So technically I've got 12 defensive backs in terms of position sitting on the roster and only two inside linebackers.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Did you keep Lewis, the kid from LSU?
No, I couldn't do it just because.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. That's the thing. Is like,
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, there's just so few spots, unless you make a huge, like, shocking cut, like a Frosty Rucker, right, or something like that, because you want to keep Stinson and Morrow. So, the defensive line, I literally have no idea how many they're going to keep. I feel like they're just going to keep all nine, but I have no idea. Like, I don't know. So, you know, it's just one of those things. I get where you're coming from the, like, veteran cornerback, but I think they wanted a veteran option just in case something happened to Peterson because – you know, knock on wood, God forbid, whatever you want to do. If they're running out a Justin Bethel, Brandon Williams, corner duo,
throw all the passes.
Yeah,
throw
it's, all the passes. It's going to be a long season defense. Like we're going to be looking at like arena football scores. Like the Cardinals may need to talk to Kevin Guy about how to score in that fashion. So. And then offensively, like, we've talked about this a dozen times. Is there, like, what you kind of hit on it earlier, you're now warming up to the idea of Cole Toner, but is there anywhere for anybody else to make it at all?
And that's where Cole is, I have him as my eighth lineman. I shorted the offense overall. I ended up only with four running backs. So Kerwin Williams, he was probably my number. He was my 54th player on the roster. So I only go with four running backs. I do go with six receivers. Basically, Kerwin gets bumped because of the
defensive guys. Oh, you did go with six wideouts, though, huh?
I did go with Britton Golden, but I bumped. Okay. And I went with Britton there. So my sixth receiver, I think with every single projection changed, cause I went with Jackson Shipley first. And then I went with, maybe Chris Hubert once, I don't know, but I think Britton Golden, his play kind of bumped him back in. He's going to sneak back onto the roster. And I think what I did is that Ifeoni Moma lost out. Kerwin Williams got bumped because of the defensive players. I kept Britton Golden over Moma. And then I only kept eight offensive linemen. And I thought, okay, Toner gets the spot over McLean. And I didn't keep a swing tackle. Reading between the lines where it said, well, if Valdir goes down, they would just slide DJ over to left tackle. Who would be the right tackle? And the question I heard people in the media asking, who would be the right tackle? Duh, that's Watford. He's played it before.
Yeah, it's Watford. And I think the Harvard boy would be like the third emergency option. So yes. That's what people don't get, and I saw somebody say something on one of my 53-man projections, like they need to keep a backup at every position on the offensive line. And I'm like, you can't.
But that's what you have the practice squad for. So you keep the guys on the roster that you can keep on the roster, and then you need another swing tackle, so you put Wetzel on the practice squad so that if something happens for a game. Then you move Valdir, then you move Humphreys over, you put Watford there. Then you promote Wetzel to the – so not every backup is going to be on the roster. Yeah. Not every backup is actually going to be on the roster.
Right, exactly. And that's what, people struggle with, that, like, DJ Humphreys is your backup left tackle. Like, there's not a question about that. The thing is, like you said, you have Earl Watford as your right tackle. There's a question mark right now about that simply because of he hasn't played. But
he'll be fine.
I am interested that you kept Britton Golden. I feel like I feel like Hubert's going to make it to the practice squad.
Yes.
I feel like Shipley has a shot to get to the practice squad because outside of the last game, he has not had a good preseason.
And that's where I'm thinking. I think Shipley actually – I don't think – anything. It's going to come down, I think, to – if there's six guys on the if there's six receivers on the roster, I think they're going to go with – I think it might only be one receiver on the practice squad. I'm not sure. But maybe they can go with two. I forget to look at how that plays out.
It changes so much throughout the year, too. Yeah. So,
on the defensive line, I go with eight, and I went with Red Bryant over Xavier Williams. That is one that could go either way. And I'm not sure which way is the better way to go.
It's one of those things where, like, you like the idea of both players. But
yes.
If you're keeping Red Bryant, you're keeping him for a playoff push, and God forbid anything happened to a veteran. If you're keeping Xavier Williams, it's because you see him as what we talked about earlier. He is the Corey Peters replacement in 2017 or 2018. So, like, that's – again, that's the way you look at these things. Like, and that's the hard decisions that people don't, you know – get to make that, you know, that Steve Keim, that's why he's the lowest paid GM in the NFL. No, that's a joke, but you know, that's what makes his job so hard. It's not finding the, you know, like you said, the 46 obvious ones. It's finding the seven hard ones, because you have to know what decision is the right decision. Am I backing up, you know, an often injured Corey Peters and a Frosty Rucker who's had some leg issues the last couple seasons with Red Bryant, or am I keeping Xavier Williams because he's the guy I want on this roster in 2017? That's what makes it difficult.
And, you know, you have to hope and pray that he doesn't get picked up somewhere else. So you have to figure he probably will, but you don't know for sure.
Well, and that's the other funny thing, and you and I are as guilty as fans are sometimes, that we always think that these guys are going to end up getting claimed, you know, right away by other teams, and then they end up on the Arizona Cardinals practice squad for two seasons, right? So,
right. Although you look at you do see guys on the defensive line, especially guys that can play tackle. Play that nose tackle day 10, because like Bruce Gaston was a guy a couple years ago who's bounced around. Cardinals had a couple of those guys, you know, over the years. Who were some of their? I can't think of. I'm drawing a blank right now, but a couple of guys that have bounced around now is on the Raiders. I'm not going to try and remember, but those type of players tend to get grabbed. So I think Xavier Williams would have interest, as opposed to. Or maybe what they do is they keep – I can see this. They keep Xavier Williams, and then if something happens, the likelihood that Red Bryant gets picked up at his – after all, a year ago, he was unemployed until Thanksgiving. Then if you need him in a pinch, you can bring him back. That still leaned towards the veteran side. I did keep both Morrow and Stinson. I think Morrow
– Morrow's like – He's like running with the ones all of a sudden.
He is an interesting guy because I see him. He doesn't play so much defensively. There are particular packages. He ends up in their nickel. In their nickel when they're trying to be run. It's when they go nickel in a rundown situation, if it makes sense. When the offense is out and they've got the three receivers, so they go with their nickel set. They put him, when I chart it, it's not their 2-4 or their 2-3 where they've got when they've got Campbell and Rucker or Campbell and whoever, and then you have Golden and Jones. They bring in Morrow, which is your hybrid between the tackle and the edge player. As if to me, I've always tend to notice when they're trying to hedge against the run in a passing formation. And so he's really valuable in that role. And Stinson...
And he's been very, very good.
Yeah, and Stinson is interesting because he just does things. I mean, he's not flashy. He just is... He's valuable in the role that he has. And maybe he's the guy you keep instead of Bryant and allows you to bring Xavier Williams, who's maybe got some more upside. But I don't know. I mean,
If you listen to the Draft Breakdown podcast that we did last night, posted this morning, and this isn't a plug, so to speak, but it always is.
It can be a plug. It's fine. Listen to the show, guys.
there was a conversation that we had about something similar to this, and that guys that do their jobs, that stay in their lanes, and that you can count on play in and play out, they're not the ones you keep, so to speak. The guys you keep, or the guys that get looked at, are the ones that you go, holy crap, did you just see that play? Like, there's nobody else on the roster that can do that. Sure, he doesn't have any idea what he's doing right now, but he offers something that we just don't have. And so I think when you look at Morrow and Stinson, you have a case of both of those things kind of being true, right? Like, yeah. You have steady Eddie Stinson who, you know, he may not get very many sacks, pressures, you know, tackles for losses and all those things, but he's going to be extremely stout at the point of attack. He is going to do a nice job in run defense and, you know, creating lanes for the linebackers, taking on double teams, so to speak. Whereas Morrow is the guy that you can put in and five plays a game, he may end up with, you know, a half a sack and a quarterback pressure and a tackle for loss and only getting, you know, not five, but, you know, 15 or 20 plays. Like, that's the difference. You might want to – Stinson's a guy that you'll play and know what you're getting. Morrow's a guy that might be a little bit of a wild card, but – my goodness, when he's on, there's, you know, he's a unique talent. It's just the problem is he's not on very often or not on consistently enough.
At inside linebacker, I go with Minter Deone Buchanan, Chris Clemons, and then the backup to Minter is Olani Fua. I think that's the easy way to go. I think they still like Fua enough, especially with his length and his speed. The potential, and then also the flexibility, because at outside linebacker, I only go with four. I go with Chandler Jones, Marcus Golden, Alex Okafor, and Kareem Martin, Shaq Riddick.
No Akpalagu, huh?
And I think they keep him for the practice squad. I think he will end up on the practice squad. I just didn't have room for him because, you know, that a fifth outside linebacker is tough to – especially when you have 12 defensive backs, which is what I have. You know, you got the 10 real defensive backs and the two defensive backs that are, you know, that are masked as linebackers. When you keep 12 defensive backs, it's hard to keep as many as you might like. So Shaq Riddick, you know, I think he may be his practice squad, but he, you know, with the torn, with the oblique injury, he might just be gone, or they might IR him. Maybe they give him another year to stash away. Eli Buka. But yeah, I didn't say that Gabe Martin had done enough to overcome Fua, and I wasn't brave enough to say that Lamar Lewis would be a 53. I think Lamar Lewis is this year's Kerryl Brooks. He might end up on the roster at some point this year. Kerryl Brooks was a practice squad guy. They talked about him a lot late in the preseason, and then he almost made the team, but he didn't. And I think that'll be Lamar Lewis.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, the lot, like I said, the defense is tough because you have to decide where you're going to invest and how heavily you're going to invest, right? So you have to be able to find the right fit, so to speak, and make sure that you create the team in a strong way that allows them to be very successful.
Anything else on the roster that you see going a little bit differently, or that you see potentially any surprises? Do you foresee any surprises? Do you foresee any potential trades? I don't see the Cardinals necessarily trading away any of their players. You know, I heard some chatter on the radio about how, you know, someone might be interested in Red Bryant, someone might be interested. Like, there's not going to be any trades. There's no one in the Cardinals that anyone will trade for. Let's be honest, because why would you trade for a player that's going to be cut? Quarterbacks are usually a little different story because you look for something in a quarterback.
Right, and you usually give up like a conditional pick.
Right. I don't see the Cardinals making any moves, but I could see them maybe, and this would be the wild card. Do they put a claim on some quarterback on waivers, or do they just find a guy? Maybe it's Barkley who comes back, or who do they? Who is going to be in that third quarterback on the practice squad? I mean, if it's not going to be Barkley, who do you think it'd be?
I have no idea, to be completely honest, because Barkley came so far out of left field that, you know, you talked about Berkovici. We've talked about it before. I think they're looking for a backup to replace Drew Stanton because, like I said, this time of year, you're not finding. Like, I mean, you look at the Broncos, and we can end on this. You look at the Broncos, they kept Trevor Siemian. Like, they didn't let him go. Like, you don't let a quarterback – I shouldn't say that. It's very rare that a quarterback that can be the, you know, quote-unquote quarterback of the future is let go and available in an oddity or in an odd way. Usually, you hang on to those guys longer than you should, a la, you know, Trevor Siemian, a John Skelton, if you will, from years past.
He's still unemployed if they're looking for a quarterback, right?
Well, and that's my point. Like, the old Cardinals hung on to him because they thought that they saw something, you know, and then they let go of him, and every NFL team was like, yeah, no thanks. Canadian football was like, yeah, no thanks. So, like, that's the reality. Like, typically, back-end guys that have never been backup quarterbacks, so Matt Barkley, Logan Thomas, Phillip Sims, all of those guys, they are available. So you're just trying to see if you're the coach that can find something that clicks, that you go, okay, I got my backup now. I just need to figure out that whole starter thing from here. So,
well, that'll wrap it up for this edition of Rise Up See Red. We talked about the roster cuts that happened, the roster cuts that are going to happen, and we look back at last preseason game and we'll head to the next preseason game. But guess what? Next week when we have our next show, we will be previewing the regular season. We'll be talking about the Patriots and Jimmy Garoppolo and Chandler Jones.
That was hilarious, though. Did you hear Arian's comment today?
No, I didn't.
About, you know, how long have they been preparing, or when did they start preparing for when did they start preparing for the Patriots? And he said May, and my response was, well, that's not going to do you any good, because Jimmy Garoppolo is the quarterback and he had like 7 NFL snaps before that. So it was just funny because it's so Bruce Arians, like, we're ready. Like, this is, you know, this team is ready. We're ready to go. Like, we're going to go out and, you know, stake our claim that we're still great. So,
and so that'll give us a wrap. Next week, we'll be talking actual getting ready for real, meaningful NFL football. Until then, that's Seth Cox from Revenge of the Birds and the NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com. And Rise Up See Red can be found on a number of places. You can find the show on CardsWire. You can find it on RevengeOfTheBirds.com as well, on the bottom of pretty much every article. It's featured on Sports360AZ.com. You can also find it on iTunes, Stitcher Radio. And likewise, you can find us on social media at Facebook and on Twitter, Rise Up C Red. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll come back to you next week, and go Cardinals.